Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, the latest on the public sector pay deal as unions meet right now to consider the overnight offer. We'll also discuss whether teachers and other workers should be paid more to work in Dublin. The new head of the Revenue Commissioners, Ruth Kennedy, will be in the studio shortly. Australian Chris Dawson is convicted of murdering his wife 40 years after she went missing after a podcast investigated her disappearance. And find out if you had a better summer than others. Weather forecaster Joanna Donnelly reviews Ireland's weather patterns over the summer just gone by. Text us with your thoughts this morning on 51551. Email today cb@rte.ie. On Twitter, we're at Today with Claire. Now, a proposed public sector pay deal has been reached following 24 hours of intense talks at the Workplace Relations Commission. The details of the potential deal have not yet been announced, but it's understood to include a pay increase worth 6.5% over 2 years. In a moment, I'll be speaking to Cormac Lucy, economics commentator with the Sunday Times Ireland, and Eoin Oirirdean, who's Labour TD for Dublin Bay North and the party's education spokesman. But first, Brian O'Donovan, RTÉ's work and technology correspondent, joins me with the very latest. So what's happening as we speak, Brian?
So, Claire, after this agreement was concluded around 6am this morning, all the sides went off to their respective unions. So from ICTU's perspective, the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, right now it is going to hold a virtual meeting of the heads of all the affiliate unions of ICTU to lay out the proposals to them. I suppose, frustratingly, as a journalist covering the talks this morning, the unions did not want to disclose any of the details as they left. They said, look, to be fair to our members, to be fair and to show respect, we are going to keep our lips sealed. We're not going to tell you what the pay offer was. We're going to talk to our members first. At that point, it will then be up to those individual unions to decide if this deal is good enough for them and good enough for them to put to their members in a ballot. Now, we have been able to establish some of the details, not all of the details. We understand it will include a 6.5% pay increase across 2 years, that's this year and next year. That would come on top of an existing 2% pay increase that is already included in the current public sector pay deal building momentum. And you may recall, Claire, that is an improvement on the offer that was tabled to unions back in June when these talks collapsed. Back then, they were offered 5%. That offer, we understand, has now been upgraded to 6.5%.
And given, Brian, that we're in a time of very high inflation, will there be other non-pay elements of this deal? So will there be reforms expected from the management side?
We still don't know the detail of that. The only other thing I can tell you on top of a basic core pay is an additional payment for lower paid workers. And again, the details still have not been focused in on that. We still don't know the finer details. But throughout these negotiations, Claire, they were very much focused on pay. And everybody said this wouldn't be a particularly long process. And it wasn't. They convened at 12 noon yesterday. They wrapped up at 6 o'clock this morning. They did go through the night. But as pay talks go, it wasn't particularly long. And that's because they said it wasn't a wider agreement. It wasn't going to include wide-changing reforms or big structural changes or efficiencies that you would normally see in these type of pay agreements. It was a basic pay deal linked to inflation. From the union's perspective, I think some in the union side will definitely be happy with this deal. If you add it all up, if you look at that 2% that was already there under building momentum, an additional 6.5%, add all that up, it comes to 8.5% inflation, currently running at 9%, predicted, however, to go up. The next task now, of course, for the unions is to sell it to their members.
Yes, and the unions meeting today deciding whether to take that to their members. So we should have a fairly clear idea in the next little while where we stand.
Exactly. So what's going to happen this morning is that the Workplace Relations Commission, the group that convened these talks, they're drawing up a formal proposal document that will then be put to both sides, both the union side and the government side. And then it is off that document that both sides will look at this, they'll take it back to their members, and people will decide if this is good enough to put to the members in a ballot. And remember, we had other ballots looming. Most of the big unions had industrial action ballots, ready to go in the coming days if this deal had not gone ahead. We're not over the line yet, but there certainly is, I think, optimism, a sense that at least the framework of a deal is there. Now it's up to the individual unions and indeed their members to decide whether or not this is good enough for them at a time of such high inflation when so many of them are coming under pressure.
Brian, thank you so much for that update. Given that you'd no sleep, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Now, as I said, I have Eoin Oirirdean, Labour TD, in the studio with me, and Cormac Lucy, economics commentator, on the line. So, Cormac, what we're hearing there from Brian is this figure of 6.5%. It's an increase that's not in line with the current rate of inflation. Should it be, given what people are facing down the tracks, particularly with energy costs?
Hi, Claire. Hi, Eoin. I'm not sure it can be. Germany is in a recession. America may be tipping into a recession. And what we're facing right now is not our typical recession. It's not a recession of jobs with very high unemployment. Rather, it's a recession of incomes. And we can see this particularly in Europe, where we've been hit by a massive energy shock that is reducing our income levels across society. And the question facing government and society is, how do we share the consequential economic pain? So it's understandable that an individual teacher or guard or nurse wants to keep their pay levels at a pace with inflation so as not to suffer a real pay decrease. But the trouble is, with this economic backdrop, all of society is facing a real pay decrease. So if one cohort of society avoids that real pay decrease, the resulting decrease will be greater for all of the rest of us.
Okay, so we'll try and fix Cormac's line because it's not great. Eoin, do you think that there is a danger here that we end up chasing inflation and do more harm in the long run?
No, I don't. And unfortunately, conservative commentators and economists never seem to find a good time for a pay rise. When there's high inflation, when there's low inflation, when there's high unemployment, when there's low unemployment, when there's a recession, when we're at a recession, there never ever seems to be a good time for a pay rise in some people's eyes. This deal that we don't know the detail of, we hear is 6.5%. I do understand that the unions were pushing hard for a better deal for lower paid public sector workers.
That seems to be in there, according to Brian.
It appears to be, but again, you know, without having seen the detail, I don't really want to comment, but that is what I am hearing. If that is the case, you know, that is, you know, the union negotiators are to be congratulated on that. Quite a number of people in the public sector are poorly paid. We do have a low pay epidemic in Ireland. We have one of the highest rates of low pay in the OECD. 23% of Irish workers are in low pay. And that leads to a whole lot of insecurities. So I think when it comes to managing our economy, we have to realise that and recognise that. If you have such insecurities in your society, in the private sector, for example, with young people, we have about 40% of young people under 30 who are insecure in employment. So the state has to install a threshold of decency when it comes to pay. Mm-hmm. And if you are a teacher, if you are a guard, if you are working on that, the coalface, as I am, in areas of the public service where they can't retain or recruit staff, for example, for therapists in the medical sphere, for children with autism, which is an acute problem in my constituency, these are real issues that we're going to have to face. And The public sector were lauded and congratulated over the course of the pandemic. They do need support from the state. And this is the kind of deal that I think is worthy of consideration.
What about this from ISME this morning, the Small and Medium Enterprise Lobby Group, reacting to this? They say that this reported deal represents self-interest, not the national interest. And they go on to say in this statement, if we throw our budgetary space at the public sector, we diminish the ability to tackle the other more urgent crises. And they mention housing in particular.
That's what ISME always say. That's what ISME will always say. So that's a kind of a knee-jerk reaction to an entity who are always standing over.
Is there no validity in that argument, if you use your fiscal space, to use the hackneyed phrase, to address this, take away from your ability to deal with other crises?
But that's an entity and other entities who always argue against pay increases. They always argue against minimum wage increases. They always argue against low-pay commission installations. They always argue against any advancement for workers' rights. If we have a situation where the state is making a statement on the baseline of pay across the economy in terms of the public sector, then the private sector has to catch up. And ISME have to realise that a huge number of workers under their watch are being very, very poorly paid, as a result of which they have insecurities in their lives when it comes to employment, when it comes to accommodation and other insecurities, and that's not fair. So it's a responsibility of ISME to be an awful lot bigger hearted and to recognise that workers under their watch, many of which are in poverty pay, and so for them to step up to that challenge and to deliver on it.
All right, Cormac Lucy, just on that point, rather than complain about what's happening in the public sector, the private sector should follow suit.
Well, the private sector is constrained by what its customers are willing to pay them for the goods and services they provide. So if they just unilaterally boost their incomes, that is going to put their profitability and their ongoing existence under pressure. We see this in the restaurant sector. So where there's massive turnover, where even top-ranked chefs quit the restaurant business because it's so competitive and so difficult. So No, I think it sounds nice. It's a neat rhetorical solution, but it just doesn't match reality on the ground. And if you're a small employer, you're now having to cope with massively increased energy bills. So when Aidan suggests, you know, that the public-private pay gap in Ireland is 41%. Public sector workers, on average, are paid 41% more than in the private sector. That compares to a gap in the UK of 8%. On top of that, there's a better pension deal. There's virtually no job risk in the public sector. There are very few people migrating from the public sector to the private sector. Much more the other way, except at the very top.
Mm-hmm. What about the teachers, though, who are newly qualified heading to Dubai? The teachers who can't afford to work in Dublin, the healthcare staff who can't afford to work in any city. Have we not a duty to protect those people and protect the services they provide?
Well, I think it's telling that whenever we have this discussion, the classification of professions that are cited, guards, teachers and nurses, they're always put to the forefront. Even though public sector workers account for less than 15% of the total workforce. And it's a simple but hard fact of life that when you're starting out in your career, that you're at the bottom of the pay tree and you're going to be earning a lot less than once you've got 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of experience behind you. So I think these make for particular hardship stories. They highlight problems that we have in other areas, such as our inability to get relatively affordable housing for our people. It shouldn't be the basis for setting pay policy for everybody, including those who are well established in the system.
Aon?
Well, look, workers haven't caused this inflationary problem at all. Workers have been working particularly hard. I would take exception with the suggestion that people in the public sector don't deal with risk. If you talk to a guard, that guard will tell you that they deal with risk all the time. Teachers working over there's a lot of risk that goes with those jobs, put themselves in harm's way. You know, nurses in ICU units, etc. These are highly skilled, very difficult jobs that the entirety of society needs for us to function. And we saw during the pandemic just how much we needed these public sector workers to put themselves in harm's way for all of us and our society to provide. Now, it's time now for the private sector to appreciate that when it comes to OECD, we have the third highest rate of low-pay workers in the OECD. That's a national scandal. But the problem is that those who are affected by that low pay are less likely to have access to the airwaves or less likely to be to have a mechanism in order to battle for their terms and conditions. So I think it's for those who might be of a conservative perspective have to realise that productivity will increase and the workforce, if you like, well-being will increase and the betterment of the entire economy will increase if wages also increase. And these doomsday scenarios that we always hear from employers' bodies and others, that if you increase the minimum wage or if you have wage increases across the from low pay, that business will be severely disrupted, has never proven to be the case. And every time the Low Wage Commission have sat down and looked at the data and advocating for an increase in the minimum wage, for example, there has never been a knock-on effect in terms of economic negativity to any sector in which those wage increases happen.
Cormac, do you disagree with that?
I do. I mean, the economy is a massively complex social system with millions of people interacting. And so an economist can say something will happen in theory. But if you take one specific example and you apply that, it may not turn out that way because of other factors. But coming back to Aon's point about having a low-pay, low-wage economy, we've had massive growth in the numbers employed in this country. We've had massive inward immigration. And if our jobs market is so off-putting to employees, how can that be explained?
But you're saying the private sector just can't pay more right now, can't do it. So are you then saying that the public sector should bring itself down to that level?
Well, I'm saying there's an inequality in the system at present where your average public sector worker is doing an awful lot better than your average private sector worker. In salary terms, in pension terms, in a very low risk of losing their job. When there are people doing the Macarena on social media at their workplace, it's typically public sector workers who are doing it. The private sector ones are working too hard. No, seriously.
Well, Claire, that's such a stupid comment. I mean, that is a stunningly stupid comment from somebody on a national radio station to make such a divisive comment in between what public sector workers do and what private sector workers do. Somebody in my position, and I am a member of the Labour Party, so I will be advocating for workers, is trying to encourage the lot of all workers, and we are advocating for a pay rise across the board. And I have said, and you haven't been able to tackle this issue, or what I've said about the rate of low pay in the Irish economy, which we are overstanding, which is the 23% of those in the Irish workforce who are statistically in low pay. To make such an abusive comment, if I might say so, about those in the public sector, really belittles your argument.
What did you mean by that, Cormac? Who have you seen doing the Macarena on social media?
Oh, guards, nurses. I mean, the Irish Times have an editorial today where the headline is, having survived Russian roulette on corporation tax, a state living hand-to-mouth has acquired an invincibility complex. It is the economic
I think it's quite clear that somebody has lost the argument completely when you start talking about the Macarena in the public sector.
Why are you talking over?
Because
I'll make his point, Eoin, and then I'll bring you in then. Go ahead, Cormac.
I mean, Eoin is right to highlight the problem of low pay in the private sector. That is largely a result. You know, we have a massively underperforming private sector in terms of, you know, the non-foreign direct investment sector. And we have the big fundamental economic problem facing Ireland is we are massively dependent on that FDI sector, but it is largely outside our control. And we need to devote whatever resources we have to boosting it, to boosting its productivity, as Eoin says, and then we will get rising pay levels in that sector. But there's a danger that we just have a complacent public sector, media, academic complex, which ignores the fact that over 85% of our workforce is in the private sector, and an awful, awful lot of them are struggling. And all of the discussion generally focuses on public sector workers.
There hasn't been mention yet of any performance-related clauses in this deal that we believe was reached overnight. It's said to be 6.5% over 4 years. Would you be concerned over 2 years? Would you be concerned, Cormac, that if there is no performance-related clause in there?
I think the performance clauses are a little bit of a fig leaf. I mean, really, the core issue is the pay. I think we're going to get broadly the same level of output from our public sector workers. I think they go into work and they try to do a good job. So, you know, I think that if you're doing a very difficult negotiation, the more open discussion points you have, the easier it will be to reach an agreement. Whereas if everything is just an arm wrestle on the percentage pay increase, it becomes much more a contest of wills and harder to reach agreement. So if they need a productivity dimension of this to get the deal over the line, well, good, and let's take the benefits of that.
Okay, so are you happy at 6.5% if it's accepted by the unions?
I think that's a reasonable deal in the circumstances, given the level of inflation. You know, I think that it may be difficult for the unions to sell this to their members, given that it represents a real reduction in income. But as a country, we are suffering internationally a real reduction in income. And the question is, how do we divide that pain? And if one group sits outside that pain sharing, the rest of us will have to endure more.
Eoin, on the 6.5%, on the material aspect of this deal, which we're hearing about this morning, does it go far enough?
Well, that's for individual unions to make their pitch to their members. It's probably not responsible of me to enter into my own viewpoint on that. It's a hard-fought deal. They had to get to the table by threatening strike action. So I think the union should be congratulated for getting to this point. Within that deal, it's not just the headline figure. It is those other elements within the deal which will deal with lower-paid workers, and they may be much more palatable, I suppose, to union members. But we'll see. But I think this is how industrial relations is all about. This is why people should join trade unions. This is what trade unionism is all about, is making your case and delivering for your members. And we'll see how it pans out over the course of today and the coming days.
But you're saying, with the proviso of there being something in there for the lower paid workers that goes beyond 6.5%, that it's worth consideration?
Well, and it is being considered, and that's why it's being brought from the table to the individual member unions and also staff associations who aren't trade unions.
Eoghan Reardon from the Labour Party and Cormac Lucy, thank you both. We'll take a break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.